501-688-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit continues with the L.A. County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The meet is off to a great start with strong fields throughout, and the stakes action continues at the Orange County Track headed by the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. The Futurity has seen some tremendous winners in years past, like standouts McKenzie in 2017, Improbable in 2018, and Thousand Words in 2019. Watch and wager on all the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers at an open satellite locations. On weekdays, our first post will be 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across the nation for their continued support of Los Alamitos Racecourse. Watch and wager on exciting Southern California thoroughbred racing. The L.A. County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos continues through Sunday, December 20th. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, at the races, and final week, of course, of the broadcast year, and make the rounds, and we'll make the rounds to Dr. Stephen Allday. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Perfect chance to rip from today's headlines, the topic that came up yesterday and last week when it comes to horse genetics and colors. And we can also get Steve's year-end thoughts. Steve, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. This worked out perfectly because I didn't want the year to end without a visit. And you know, before we talk the topic of the day, we haven't talked in a month or so. Everything okay? And talk a little bit about your year-end thoughts and summation.
Well, I mean, you know, literally in my lifetime, and I think most people's, you know, they would be, you know, involved in pretty much anything in life. This has got to be the strangest year on record, you know. It's just, you know, I mean, I'm a scientist, you know, so, and with a medical background, I mean, you know that viruses in particular are out there, and they're going to mutate, and things are going to happen. And, you know, it's just, I mean, well, strangely enough, I mean, I remember talking to people about this maybe a decade ago that I said, you know, I said, the way viruses work, I said, you know, this can happen at any time. And,
sure.
You know, I hate to be the person to be the predictor of something like this, but it does happen, and it has happened, and it will continue to happen. Okay, and hopefully it'll be about 100 years from now, so it'll be way past our experience or knowledge. But, I mean, you know, as far as I know, I mean, everybody I'm close to and family-wise, I mean, we've gotten through it relatively unscathed so far. So we'll hope for the best. And obviously, it puts a true, you know, damper and spin on things, and in your perspective of what's important and what's not certainly becomes it gets registered in a different category at this point. So, obviously, horse racing was very, very heavily affected by, you know, the attendance and the pandemic, and maybe, you know, I mean, I think we're probably on the downslide. With a vaccine that's highly efficacious, and you know, it looks like we've got a shot to get over this, and then we try to get back to some, you know, relatively a semblance of normalcy within the next year. So let's cross our fingers, hope for the best.
You know, when we think back to the spring and when we were really in the early stage of this, and you know, people had, there'd been documentation about how, you know, different animals can pick up coronaviruses, and you actually corrected me about horses and their susceptibility. How different is this from the things we've for human you know, passing through, you know, human hosts? How different is it, Steve, from you know, strangles and you know, the herpes conversations that we have, where you know, we talk about sterilizing surfaces and you know, ambient leaving ambient bacteria or you know, whatever residue, saliva and so forth with horses that, you know, that have passed it. I mean, how is it pretty much a similarity?
Well, you know, the funny thing about viruses, Steve, is, see, bacteria basically can still reside in a, you know, a sporulated form. There are a number of different types of bacteria that can live in the environment and can become somewhat inactivated until they get the right conditions. The one thing about a virus that is unique is that it requires a living host to survive, some sort of living tissue to take residence up in, replicate, and then pass on. And when you get, one of two things occurs, either it will kill off all its hosts, so therefore there's nothing for it to live in anymore, so it kind of it kills itself out, which is, you know, almost impossible, relatively speaking. Or what happens, Steve-O, is that it essentially, you know, there is the phenomenon known as herd immunity, meaning that if it goes, if there's enough infection and the immune system sets up enough resistance and or antibodies against it, then essentially it can't set up housekeeping in any more living host because it doesn't have the ability to penetrate those cells and replicate anymore. So, you know, that's the simple version of it. But unfortunately, the simple version of it is the truth. It essentially, as we found out, and as in most viruses, once they've been immunocompromised due to, like, pre-existing conditions, let's say drugs and or let's say chemotherapeutic agents, radiation, things like this, it basically has a decreased immune system to stop it from invading and, you know, proliferating and passing on from host to host. So the one thing a virus has got to have, it's got to have a host to survive. Once it's either not able to replicate and move from host to host, it dampens itself out or kills itself out, or it ends up, you know, or you have a mass die-off and they're so far apart that the virus basically puts itself out of business because it killed off all of its potential hosts that it can replicate and survive in. So That's pretty much how it works. You know, I mean, it's a simplified version, but that's the most accurate version I can give you.
Well, we keep, you know, kind of reiterating that in comparison to, you know, so many areas, the industry, you know, really pulled things together quickly, and there's been interruptions and there were swaths of seasons interrupted or canceled, but overall it's remarkable how, you know, how smooth things have run, and, you know, including the biggest, you know, some of the biggest standards on the, you know, on the racing calendars came off. So just keep plowing forward. The topic of the week, Steve, came up in a couple of different guises, and I know it's something that we talked about ages ago, and I can't even remember what the, you know, what the motivating specifics were. But it had to do with colors and with genetics. And last week in New York, there was a piebald thoroughbred that ran.
Yeah.
You just they'll see so few. And then over the weekend in Japan, these white thoroughbreds seem to be, they're being bred, and they're kind of a novelty. And it feels like, this one in Japan, this filly, is a talent, an authentic talent, won a Group One. We're kind of waiting for a top level white thoroughbred in North America. But I'd love for you to talk about the basics of color, the coloration schemes in sport horse world. I thought it'd be something that people would really like to hear more about.
Well, I mean, I'm not a big believer in colors one way or the other. I mean, some people like to bet gray horses, some like to bet the odd color horse. I mean, to me, they could be Barney the Dinosaur Purple. If they can run, they can run. You know, it doesn't really matter to me. I'm kind of like Shakespeare was about names, like what's in a name, what's in a color? Not much, really. I'm more of a, confirmation and musculature and ability and this sort of thing. Obviously, there's things that go back in time, when guys talked about white feet and white legs, the old saying about one white foot buy a horse, two white foot try a horse, and then, three white foot, be careful or look well about them, and then four white feet do well without them. Well, that was because they felt like white feet were a problem and soft and could create a problems. Typically white feet can be a problem as a rule, but I think we have enough ability with our shoeing and the options that we have that it's probably not nearly as big a deal maybe as it was once upon a time. A striped hoof seems to be a little stronger hoof, meaning that it has both dark and light color, in combination. So that's not such a big deal. What I remember was Steve Morgeland had a filly that was a completely white, and she was okay. I cannot remember what they called her, something, White Beauty or something like that. I think that's what brought up the initial conversation. And I remember seeing that filly at Churchill, and Morgeland was in, God rest his soul, he's not with us anymore. But he had that filly. I think he actually won a few, decent races with her. But it's a rarity, okay? And, the white color, is very, very difficult to reproduce because it's, completely recessive. So, you've got to do a lot of genetics, and planning in order to even get one. And a true albino in a horse is like, with no, completely devoid of any color, is that, they have no color even in their eyes, and there's no color in their hairs. They basically have red eyes, and it's difficult, to damn near impossible. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a true albino horse myself, but I'm sure there's been one out there somewhere. But the color patterns, like, for instance, gray horses and roan horses, they come from the gray coat gene. And, obviously grays themselves are dark based color with white, and then they'll have some colored black hairs in between. And as they get older, they get lighter and lighter. Like, case in point would be a horse like Tappet. He was a darker, had a little bit more, darker gray, steel type gray when he was younger, dappled through and this sort of thing. And now he's almost completely white. Even his mane was dark when he was younger. And now his tail and mane are completely white. So he's literally a white horse except for, eye color and this sort of thing. And obviously it's black hooves. But the coat color gene or the genes that carry coat color, I mean, you got to realize that, a gray has it's a dominant gene, and one of the parents has to be gray in order for a gray to exist. You can't breed a bay to a bay and get a gray. It just doesn't work that way. The most common coat color, obviously, in thoroughbreds is a bay. That's, it's dominant, but if they can be what they call heterozygous dominant, or meaning both parents are heterozygotes, meaning they have a dominant gene and a recessive gene, then you can possibly get a recessive color like a chestnut out of that. Of course, chestnuts can come from recessive genes that show up on both sides. And so, you know, it's just knowing these patterns and things like this to kind of what your expectations are. But you can take it to the bank. If you see a gray, one of the parents was a gray. So that's why Tappet tends to get a lot of grays, obviously. So when you get these really, really strange combinations like piebaldness and things like this, these are, you know, recessive traits that come out of two sides with the white, and then they'll show up as, you know, large splotches. They can be like paints. I mean, they can look like a thoroughbred, can look like a paint horse, and there have been a number of them that actually have a big, large splotch of white across the body or up on the neck and or the hip and or the head combination thereof. And, you know, these are rare occurring, obviously. You don't see them very often, but they can occur, and they do occur from time to time. I remember Jack Van Berg, when he was around, he had a chestnut, or, well, what the quarter horse guys call sorrel, so a really bright red chestnut with a lot of big splotch of white on the side, and he looked like a paint horse. And it was so rare, I mean, everybody was kind of like, where'd you get that paint horse from? Well, you know, he's thoroughbred. And you do get certain horses that'll pass that on. So I remember when I worked for Mr. Paulson, we had Australian bred mare who was a chestnut with a lot of white, and they bred her to theatrical, and we got a chestnut colt with a little bit of roan through him, surprisingly enough, and there was no gray in the heritage, but he had a big splotch of white on his body as well, and he would turn out to be one heck of a nice grass horse. So you just never know how these things are come up, but when you cross them over and over and over, and if you were to really, really, like, you know, plot out the genetic code or the lack thereof, or let's say the recessive genes, you can kind of track it back and figure out where it comes from.
Why don't we see more of them in thoroughbreds?
I think that's an interesting question, because obviously thoroughbreds were derived from Arabians, and it's a unique situation. A lot of pure colors came from the Arabians when they started crossing different types or different areas of Arabians way, like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and they came up with thoroughbreds. I think the dominant genes essentially were so much more prevalent that what ended up happening was that when they ended up having, quite a dominant coat color, you know, situation, as we have taken, you know, more and more liberties, and we spread the genetics around the planet more liberally than we have in the past, you know, with horses shipping from Europe to here, Asia to here, you know, all around the planet, stams, shuttling, things like this. I think you're starting to see a little bit more variance, because you're kind of opening up, you know, the potential of, you know, a lot of these recessive genes getting to each other. It was a rare situation to see these abnormal or strange coat colors in the United States, hardly ever, you know, for about the last, you know, 75 to 100 years. But as we've opened up more and more, you know, crossing from horses from around the planet, I think you're starting to see a little bit more. So you're probably co-mingling a lot more of the recessive gene pool together. That just has a chance to come together. And you're seeing a few more white horses, you know, like in Japan. And, you know, Japan basically was not a center of the universe, but they imported a lot of horses from lots of different places. Australia, Europe, United States, and whatever. And they bring in gene pools from lots of different locales. And that's probably what created the white thoroughbred. That's actually, I did see that too, by the way, that horse won the group one, which is, I mean, group ones in Japan have like enormous purses, and they're extremely tough and competitive.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's a major, you know, accomplishment for, and a rarity, you know, for a white horse to do that, because they're so rare, and to find a really, really good one is so rare, no matter what color they are. So that's when you kind of like, you know, that's when, you know, two very rare occasions met at the same time. So that may be something you may never see for maybe the rest of this lifetime anyway. So
yeah,
that's probably why it has occurred as much as it is, or is occurring maybe more so now than it has in the past, for sure, Steve.
It, you know, and it this goes back to Friday, and I found the picture that that kind of triggered the conversation in New York, and Dr. Gustafson, the Sid Gustafson, commented on it, and people were, you know, were really captivated. And then on the heels of that comes you know, the Sodashi, the white thoroughbred, and you know, and I had heard the term piebald and skewbald too, and in fact, you know, there's distinctions between the colorations, I guess, of a skewbald and versus a piebald.
Typically, yes. The piebalds tend to be more, you know, right, like a large, like splotch or a bit, you know, almost all the head covered, and then some body, you know, hair white as well. The skewbald can be, you know, essentially, you know, splotches, large splotches of white at various and different parts of the body, and not necessarily just the head or this sort of thing. And it looks like a paint horse, obviously. You know, it's, that's you know, they've got different descriptions in the paint registry. They call them Tobianos and Overos, but the Overo would be more of like what you consider to be a piebald, and the Tobianos would be like a skewbald. But it's the same. You know, it's essentially the same type of thing. If you look up the definitions, they're very, very similar, or they're close in description, and actually what you see, the phenotype, what you see express-wise. Genetically, they can sit back and kind of go through the genetic pattern and figure out where they, that came from, if they sit and plot it out with all the family members and whatever. So you can kind of, like, you know, catch where the link it came from. Essentially, it's a rarity, and obviously it's a recessive expression of a phenotype that, you know, essentially if you were to breed it, it's not going to pass it on necessarily. If you bred them to a, like a gray, you'd probably get a roan paint horse. You'd probably get maybe just a gray, or maybe the, just a straight gray, or you know, whatever, because the gray is so dominant. So more than likely that would be the case there. So it's just, you know, one of these genetic rare occasions that crops up, and every the stars line up, and bingo, that's what you get.
Now, I'm going to send a link out, the tweet out that got this conversation going from the other day. And I also am going to send a link to a section of Grammarist, which gives everybody the specifics of how to differentiate a piebald, a skewbald, a pinto, or a paint, and you know, the differentiating and identifying them. There's a whole separate conversation to have about donkeys and burros, and you know, the product. What's the other donkey? The horse, you know, the either a mare,
mules. Well, mules versus... they have asses have a little genetic difference in their gene numbers different. Now that you can cross a jack with a mare or a jenny with a stallion, and you can get a mule, but unfortunately, because they have a different horses are 32 genes and asses are 33, they are sterile. They don't produce ova or you know, they're born with, you know, genitalia, but they don't have, you know, they don't have the ability to produce ova or spermatozoa. So they're essentially a sterile animal, and a mule is kind of, a mule literally is a hybrid of sorts, but it's a sterile hybrid that can't reproduce. So that's the unique part. But the color patterns in mules they can pick up the colors from the horse side, and you'll see paint mules, and you'll see piebald mules, and you'll see, you know, right on down the line. I mean, lots of different colors, and I've seen mules that have Appaloosa colors in them, and it's quite interesting actually, because you get the characteristics in the straight mane. They don't get a mane that lays over that it stands up like a spike, you know, sort of like a like a person that gets a mohawk. And, you know, they have a stripe down their back, and don't have much of a tail. It's just a little hairs at the end. And you get a lot of the coat colors, combinations and stuff that come from the horse side. You know, so it's quite interesting. I mean, mules can be, you know, quite a variety of colors and patterns and things like that.
Well, and the name that I was reaching for when it came to this, because again, there's these differentiations because of a male horse and a female donkey producing a hinny. Yes. And it's an amazing, this is a whole amazing subset, when it comes to these creations. I mean, there's so many things I could, and we've talked about donkeys and mules before in the same vein. Sure. The follow-ups to these topics, you talked about the white feet and the white socks. Then there's the whole element of the flax. The flaxen mane and, yeah. and flaxen tail.
Well, a lot of the coat colors are interesting. Like, most people don't realize, but you can get a Palomino thoroughbred, actually. And it's a rarity. It doesn't happen very often, but you do see them that actually had that golden yellow color with a light mane and light tail. And they look like Trigger, a good old Roy Rogers steed. And, it's a registered thoroughbred. And it doesn't happen very often, but you do see them. They're quite interesting looking. I've seen a couple in my life, but not many at all. They're very, very rare and far and few between.
Steve, I thought this was a great kind of fun and just a neat, free and easy way to wrap up the year. It's been difficult, but hopefully you get a chance to get back in the rodeo ring as well soon, and hope everything is well on the business front. When it comes to Luberson and Reborn and anything else you're working on, best wishes to you and the girls and everybody. And as always, we appreciate the opportunity to have horse health today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn with Dr. Stephen Alding.
Hey, Steve, listen, have a great year. Maybe we've got something to look forward to for sure for 2021. And let's, hope and pray that we get back to some sort of normalcy and put this behind us.
I'm going to, it just occurs to me, I did not see you once over the course of the year, and not that, we would have had the normal occasions, but I don't go a year without seeing you in Kentucky or in New York, and it just occurred to me. So we'll look forward to seeing you at some point in 2021.
Looking forward to it. Yeah, that'd be a great time. Take care.
Dr. Stephen Alday, everybody. You can follow Doc variety of ways you can interact with Team All Day. There's the alldayway.com, where Steve and Alex Hassinger will answer your questions about your horse, your sport horse, your trail horse, whatever kind of horse you've got. And of course, Luberson.com and everybody involved in the business when it comes to Luberson and Reborn. Steve is, he's not big on Twitter, but Four Legs Doc on Twitter, if you want to reach out that way as well. Dr. Stephen Alday, always edifying. Whatever topic I throw at him, he can riff. Certainly this was one of those today's headlines. I'm going to send out that link too, and you'll see the picture of the horse from the other day. We're going to stay here, and we've got another half hour to top of the hour. Andy Serling at 11, Todd Pletcher later on as well. Right now we go to California, and plenty to discuss with Steve Anderson. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. How are things in?
Not so bad. Not so bad. You had a busy week, and I was a little bummed. As soon as I wrapped up on Friday, I said to myself, we never got to the big quarter horse topics. Luckily, we had touched on it the week before, and you had Saturday and Sunday night at Los Al. Ended up pretty exciting. I was following it via Twitter, and bring us up to speed.
Well, it was a very open champion of champions, and it proved to be with a 12-1 shot. Apolitical Pence, who had only won a few small stakes earlier in his career, scored a 12-1 upset, which didn't help the world champion situation related to the quarter horse of the year voting. No clarifications there. This was one of the less expected winners, even though he was a little bit bet on. So in that regard, the Champion of Champions, which is equal to or greater than the Breeders' Cup Classic in terms of influence on the year-end voting, didn't really help. So it looks as if that's in a bit of chaos. There'll be a lot of support for Whistle Stop Cafe, the two-year-old filly that won the All-American Fraternity. She was already very much in the conversation, and certainly will stay in that status following this result, because it was a bit of a roughly run race. There was a few that didn't get their best opportunities, such as Chocolatito, who had won several major stakes at Losail earlier this year and could have claimed Horse of the Year with a win on Saturday night. He was bumped a little bit at the start and didn't have a clear running lane midway, but still accelerated well to finish close, but not close enough. There were seven within three-quarters of a length of the wire to give you an indication of how close it was after 440 yards. So that was a little confusing in regards to the greater picture of the 2020 season. And then on Sunday night, Apolitical Patty, the fastest qualifier, was let go at 5-1 and won the $1.9 million fraternity. And that was not really much of an upset, since she was the fastest qualifier and was the third choice in the betting. But she ran back to what was an electrifying trial win on November 22nd and did very well. So that was a good capper of the season for trainer Monte Rosa, who had widespread success way back in March at Remington. Also had an outstanding Labor Day Saturday. Sunday, rather, Reynoso won in the All-American Gold Cup and the All-American Derby, and he won the Ed Burke $1 million fraternity at Losail in June, and now he's won this $1.9 million race. So he had quite the season across the country, too. So that was a good one for him. And those were the two of the three big races this month at the track for quarter horses. They've got the Southern California Derby this Sunday, the 20th. Which is the technical final day of the quarter horse meet, which resumes just a week later because it's a year-round season. But there is one more good-sized quarter horse race there coming up this weekend, two on Sunday evening. So pretty good finish to the season there in terms of the quality of the quarter horse stakes. So that was pretty good.
A couple of questions on the Futurity and on the Champion of Champions. $2 million essentially in the Futurity pot, and $600,000 for the Champion of Champions. Apolitical Pence by Apolitical Jess, an Oklahoma bred, and Apolitical Patty by Apolitical Blood. This one, an Idaho bred. Where do all these apolitical families, where do they derive? Who's the patriarch?
Well, it's a fascinating pedigree. In the case of Apolitical Patty, the remarkable thing about her is that she is a half brother to Zoomin for Spuds, who won the Champion of Champions in 2006, and also was a troubled ninth in the Champion of Champions on Saturday night. That was a record fifth appearance for him in that year-end race. There's been two others in history who've done it as well. So that was kind of fascinating. Oh, then that, of course, that's the family of the late Jim Walker from Idaho, and they have two mares. And so one
Amazing.
Of them happens to be in the situation in which she's produced two grade one winners at Los Alamitos, one a $600,000 winner and the other one $1.9 million. So it's really fascinating to see, what can take place there. So in that regard, a really unique pedigree in that sense. Apolitical Blood is a cis stallion who stands down in Louisiana, and he's by Apolitical Jess. And that is the apolitical line, so to speak, in terms of why you see these names pop up time and time again. Apolitical Jess was a fascinatingly fast horse that ran here at Los Alamitos about 10 years ago. And so you're seeing the first and second generations of that stallion, behind that stallion, continuing to do well with some other stallions, too.
Nate,
but let me just say real quickly that one thing that might fascinate people who follow horse racing in every aspect is that the leading stallion in quarter horse racing for the last few seasons is Favorite Cartel. He's by Favorite Trick, the 1997 Thoroughbred Horse of the Year. And he stands here in California. And Favorite Trick really didn't make it as a thoroughbred stallion, let's be clear. And he was bred to quarter horses, and one of them was Favorite Cartel, who they gave it a try. They said this is an interesting new chance to give quarter horse bloodlines something a little different. So they did that many, many years ago, and it's paid an influence. And the one thing that might be really fascinating to talk about in a couple of years is something that's taking place right now down in Louisiana as well, and that's the fact that the 2019 sprint champion, Matoli, who ran so well for Steve Asmussen, is also being bred to quarter horse mares. And it's an artificial insemination project. It's not a wide cover. But that just goes to show you that, continuing what you said about apolitical blood and some of those stallions, is that some of these pedigree lines can come from remarkably diverse places. So 2 or 3 years from now, we could talk about Matoli yearling and Matoli 2-year-old quarter horses that are doing very well.
I had not heard that about Matoli being used that way. And I mean, how often do we see this?
You see it a little bit more. It was an interesting situation where I think I was at Ruidoso in 18 months ago in June of 2019 when Matoli won the Met Mile. And I was sitting with some folks, including track owner Johnny Trotter, and he brought a copy of the form over to a conversation I was having with Ben Hudson, the editor of Track Magazine outside of Fort Worth, and said, "Look at this horse." And it was the past performances of Matoli at that point in his career. He said, "Can you imagine if we bred quarter horses to this stallion?" Because everybody knew he was doing a stud at the end of 2019.
Right.
So one thing led to another, and conversation started. And when he went to stud, they talked to some folks, and I understand, these are the things I understand, that a fee was agreed upon, and a farm in Louisiana is handling the ship scene. So that's how that sort of started, and I think it was just a matter of looking to broaden the bloodlines of quarter horse on the top side, and that's something that's fascinating. You know, heck, maybe there's something going on in, you know, Australia or Europe that we could add to the thoroughbred line over here because we're so interested in exporting our stallions. Maybe we should import something.
Huh. That
variety.
Yeah, it's I'm fascinated at how to be a quarter horse then, Steve. What is the breeding percentage criteria? And obviously it has to be a designated quarter horse mare, right? I mean, is there?
Yep.
How does that stud book work?
You can have a registered quarter horse mare.
That's it.
And you can have a stallion, outside stallion, out of the quarter horse stud book. So, in that regard, you see, over the years, I mean, decades, you've seen sprint stallions in thoroughbred racing. You know, some horses that did well in the Southwest that were introduced to the line with mixed results. And so just as long as that mare is a quarter horse, that's, you're in line, you're in compliance with the pedigree book.
This has been an offbeat hour, essentially, because we just finished with Dr. Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn, and we were talking about these off colors and the piebald that ran the other day at Naira at Aqueduct, and the white filly in Japan. And it's a good segue with you to fold in the international topic, and you know, of course, the HKIR Sunday morning, and you know, you and Marcus, you're the go-tos on the international front. Some quick thoughts about the weekend before we talk about Los Al Thoroughbred.
Well, one thing real quick, I'm trying to get back to that white Thoroughbred registration, is that in the late 1980s in Louisiana, Louisiana Downs, there was a Louisiana bred owned by John Franks called Grand Espoir Blanc that was just a touch below a stakes horse. And that was the only one I've ever seen race in person. And I can tell you that to look at him, you did a triple take. It was just he was such a remarkable horse. You almost say, "Get this dude back in the barn. He's going to get sunburned. He's so fragile looking." But he was a pretty pretty easy horse to follow in terms of just appreciation and not a whole lot of ability. Certainly nothing like this Japanese filly that's taken to the storm and will be in the Japanese Oaks Trail in a few months' time. So that'll be fascinating to see how much she can progress, because these horses that win the race that she won at Hanshin on Sunday tend to be very productive 3-year-olds as well.
What was your impression of the action at Chatin Sunday morning?
Golden 60 was the highlight for me.
He's
always
great.
You always expect to see the O'Brien factor is longstanding there, and those horses are always looked upon as factors. I was very disappointed in Mogul's Breeders' Cup. I thought he'd be much better. So to see that come through was maybe he was just one race away, and at that time, and so that was encouraging too. And I'm just glad they got the races off. I happened to have been to the big races in April there 2.5 years ago. It's a fascinating venue for horse racing. It's so much different than what we have in the United States, in so many different levels. And hopefully they can get back to some level of normalcy in 2021, because it's so much. It's the only sport in town. I mean, there isn't anything else in Hong Kong that plays in the sporting market. There's some rugby, soccer, tennis tournaments that come and go, but that's it. And it'd be nice to see the sporting culture there have a chance to see the Hong Kong races return in 2021, as so many other places around the world.
Well, no doubt. Steve, the action, meanwhile, at Los Al, we're coming up on this last week, the Futurity coming up on Saturday, the Starlit a week ago, and there's also some very seemingly important maiden action, not to be dismissive of the stakes, but talk about that maiden race. On Sunday that saw the fillies throw down Moonlight Doro and Frosteria.
Yeah, and Frosteria is that of Hysterical Lady, the old Jerry Hollendorfer mare from the 2000s that ran so well, and she was handily beaten by Moonlight Doro. And Mandela was very bullish going into the race, and the betting reflected that. She was favored, and strongly so, and ran a very good race to win, and I expect her to be in some nice races at Santa Anita over the next 60 days. And Frosteria may not be far behind her. She ran a very good second, so that was good. This happens oftentimes at Los Al, these stables who have such depth in their maiden special weight horses, especially 2-year-olds at this time of year, can't wait for Santa Anita with everything. And the prize money this year at Los Al was increased for some of those races. So in terms of value, it certainly is present to run. And it might be a little bit easier, and then you get into a race like that, and it doesn't seem to be any easier than it might be in 2 weeks' time at Santa Anita. But, this is a very popular dirt course, and that regard is supported by some of the leading trainers in California, in the city, and of Los Angeles area. So in that regard, there's always some pretty good ones, and you have to remember that Accelerate and Arrogate ran together in a maiden race 4 years ago. So it was, it's been going on for years now in that regard. So, kind of we'll look at those overnights over the last couple of days at Los Alamitos this weekend, to see what the details of the names are.
Well, in this race, Moonlight Doro, an 87 buyer out of this, and another solid effort from Frosteria, the Hysterical Lady product. Just so happens she's kind of run into some, run into some buzzsaws. This is obviously the latest My Racehorse / Spendthrift product, and Mandela's got we'll see about Astute snapping back after the disappointment in the Starlet, but he's got some babies.
She had an excuse. She appeared to have struck the side of the gate leaving there, and he said, and came back with a knot on the side of her on her hip, and he is up to thinking that just ruined her chances. So yes, you're right. That'll be interesting to see whether or not she can bounce back in due time in the races coming up at Santa Anita, in a few months' time. So I think that one can't be forgotten. Just because of that one race, she just didn't get her chance and we'll see how that goes. Also, from that maiden race at LoSalle on Sunday, look out for Moraz, who ran third. Michael McCarthy's horses oftentimes need a start to be their best, and even though she was well-beaten by some very nice horses. So she may be one to look at, Moraz, at Santa Anita this winter.
What I've only in passing mentioned the Soviet problem, and this was Carly Gaines with the Bluegrass Cat filly. I had some fun with that name, actually, that yesterday, kind of laughing about Bluegrass Cat and Sensible Girl. They could have either named her Bluegrass Girl or Sensible Cat, so they did okay. that was a nice win.
Yeah, it was fine. It's a state bred win, and she's got a nice 200 grander coming for her in middle of June at Santa Anita in the Cal Cup Oaks. And this weekend on Sunday at LoSalle, in the final day of the 3-week meeting, there is a $100,000 King Glorious for 2-year-old males, state bred males, and it drew like 19 or 20 nominations. I think
wow.
That's a record number of nominations. And there's a few of them who weren't nominated, who haven't been put into the program, who could be supplemented as well. The problem is the supplemental fee is $25,000. Well, you think, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Can't supplement to a $100,000 race. It's such an exorbitant fee. However, it buys that horse privileges in almost all of the California bred races for the rest of his career. So there is some possibilities that you see this once or twice a year. Somebody does go ahead and pay into one of these races with such a high fee. But again, you're buying a lifetime subscription. It's not unlike the Breeders' Cup from the 80s when you had to pay extraordinary numbers to get into the race. But in this case, you've earned lifetime privileges. So the option was $500 as a yearling or $25,000 as a racehorse. Your call.
Interesting. Well, you mentioned the full fields, and obviously we had a conversation going into the meet with Bob Moreno, and he was excited. This was even before word came from San Francisco that Golden Gate was going to hold off until the end of the month to resume racing. One thing that we forgot to mention with Bob going into the meet, Steve, was that the $2 pick six, no jackpot nonsense, a straightforward pick six, and the money has started to accrue, and we go into Thursday's card. I saw where Brad Free has got a complete write-up of the $2 pick six sequence for Thursday.
Yes, Brad wrote a good detailed piece that gives the better some highly suggestions on through the sequence, and that's hopefully that'll help some folks get organized in terms of this $2 pick six. It's kind of a throwback to 15 years ago before the rainbow and the jackpot programs were introduced. And secondly, before the popularity of the 50-cent pick fours and pick fives really took over jackpot betting, because the rainbows are fine on the final day when the takeout is fair. They've run their course.
Get rid of them. I hear you. You're not going to get an argument from me. It would be a positive development, and let's see if people respond. I'll reach out to Brad and get him in tomorrow, so we can go through that. It's a tough sequence, and I'm sure there's people that Steve that aren't familiar with the hairpin, the elongated paperclip layout of LoSalle and that interminably long stretch.
Well, what's fascinating is the final turn is about the same circumference as the other tracks. But the thing is that when you turn for home, it's a fairgrounds or Churchill-style circumstance in which you run a few strides, then you reach the quarter pole, particularly fairgrounds. So you see this time and time again. It's not the horses that are getting tired. Sometimes I think it's the jockeys who aren't timing their races correctly. they've got the same racehorse underneath them that they've ridden at Del Mar and Santa Anita. They've just asked them to do different things. So, pardon me. Sometimes you see these horses at the quarter pole going, oh, he looks awful. he's fading from contention. What's my pick doing? And a furlong later, he's closer. And then next thing you know, in those final strides, it's a horse. They're back in the frame, and it goes both ways. You see horses that are, looking like they're running like a million bucks at the quarter pole, and at the eighth pole, they're going, I thought we were done.
I know it's very different, and it just we're used to that the camera angle and where is it? There's a couple of places, Fairgrounds and Kentucky Downs, where you think you're almost home, and then, oh, wait, the next camera is going to pick it up from here, and you're like, oh, my God, come on.
Well, the problem, which really isn't a problem, is that for the most part, we have cookie-cutter racetracks in the United States. I mean, certainly Belmont's different than Del Mar, and you mentioned Kentucky Downs as being extraordinarily unique. But by and large, you turn for home, and there's 3/16 of a mile to go at Philadelphia Park, just like there is at Remington Park, et cetera, et cetera. So you know how much more is expected and where your runners need to be. And, you know, it's not like Europe or Australia, where you get into these variations from venue to venue, left-handed, right-handed, you know, different distances run at different ways. So in that sense, it's asking a little bit more of the riders, particularly.
Steve, speaking of riders and having to get back in shape pretty quickly, you wrote about Mike Smith the other day, and he's hoping to ride Saturday in the Futurity. Let's use that to talk about the upcoming opportunities, the Futurity on Saturday, and then I want to get some speculation on opening day at Santa Anita. This is our last week of shows. We won't be on next week, so curious some of your early reads on December 26th, opening day at Santa Anita. But talk about Saturday, first of all, and what we're looking at for the Futurity.
Well, it looks like only about four or five runners right now. It's going to be a very small field. Now, there's a strong possibility that some horses might be added for a $7,500 supplemental fee when entries are taken on Wednesday. But Red Flag, the winner of the Bob Hope Stakes, the 7-furlong Grade 3 at Del Mar in mid-November, is going to be the favorite. Baffert is running Spielberg, a million-dollar yearling who hasn't lived up to that, who was fourth in the same race. Mandela is running Petruccio, who will be ridden by Mike Smith, who was a maiden special weight winner at a mile on turf at Del Mar on October 31st. So those are three of the runners. And Weston, who won the Best Pal Stakes at Del Mar back in August but didn't run very well in the Bob Hope, is also in the consideration. So the race lacks depth. There's a couple of nice horses in there, but it doesn't have the same group that we've seen in past seasons. And that's many factors. People are waiting to Santa Anita with some of their three-year-olds. They don't want to go a mile on the 16th this week. Baffert usually has one or two or three in the race. This year he only has one. And nobody shipped in. Where are you guys? I mean, there's $200,000 for grade two with Kentucky Derby points at stake. I mean, you know, I realize it's California in a pandemic. It's not easy to get here, but there was an opportunity for somebody to come in and give it a try.
Fair point.
It's going to be a small field, so we'll wait and see tomorrow how it finalizes. But that's the lineup is going to be a little light. As for opening day at Santa Anita, it looks very strong. They have six stakes races, five graded stakes races, and three of which are grade ones: the Malibu and La Brea, 7-furlong races for three-year-olds, and the American Oaks at a mile and a quarter on turf for three-year-old fillies. So there's depth there. The looks as if the Malibu will have Charlatan in his first start since the Arkansas Derby, Nashville from Steve Asmussen, Express Train from John Sheriff, and Collusion Illusion, the Bing Crosby winner, who was not very fortunate in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, is expected to start in that race. That'll be a small field compared to the La Brea, the American Oaks. So those will be more strongly supported races, I should say.
The La Brea, I think Baffert, you got a quartet for Baffert you wrote about Sunday.
Well, he doesn't have Gamine, the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint winner, in the barn right now. She's having a break, which is deserved after three grade ones in 2020. And her goal is some springtime races, particularly that Kentucky Derby undercard sprint for fillies and mares. I believe it's called the Derby City Distaff in May, which you think, oh, that's 4 months, 5 months from now. That's around the corner, folks. And so he doesn't have her in the race. Without her, he's got a lot of the same horses, per se. They're very nice. Few of them are accomplished. They maybe deserve a grade one chance. They really have worked well in the last couple of days at Santa Anita did this group. So we'll see whether Mernice, for example, can rise up and run a leading race in something like that. The American Oaks should be quite strong. Sharing, trained by Graham Motion, who was fourth, beaten less than a length in the Grade One Matriarch against older fillies and mares at Del Mar on Thanksgiving Sunday. He's coming back to California to race against about 7 or 8 or 9. Mucho Gusto, who won the Pegasus World Cup back in January, is booked to run in the San Antonio Mile in the 16th race on the main track the same day in what could be a prep for the same Pegasus race this next month at Gulfstream. His competition will include Sharp Samurai, is expected to include Sharp Samurai, who was third in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. So, across the board, there's some good quality races, as you would expect, for opening day at Santa Anita. And it looks like a pretty strong start to the meet. Since it no longer rains in California, hopefully they'll be able to have it on December 26th, because last year, you may recall, it was delayed a few days because of extra wet conditions.
That's right. That's right.
So we haven't had any measurable rain in Southern California in a month, which is not a good sign from an environmental point of view, but does wonders for the day-to-day training of thoroughbred racehorses.
Well, and also it makes me ask about the grass course, and also I'm sure people looking forward to this new shoot, the new added configuration on the grass course.
They no longer run hillside turf spreads. That has stopped 19 months ago, and there's no indication from management that that's going to begin anytime soon, particularly with, as you mentioned, this recent investment over the last 6 months to build a chute from the backstretch adjacent to the backstretch dirt chute that will allow for one turn 6 furlong and one turn 6.5 furlong races. Those horses will run maybe anywhere from 50 to 100 yards before they join the first turn of the main dirt track, cross that, then join the main turf oval with about 5.5 furlongs of racing to go to the wire. So they've for the last year have run 5.5 furlong races on the turf course oval. And those races started on the dirt track, and there was a couple of strides there before they joined the turf course oval. The problem was a lot of those horses, almost race by race, one or two essentially stumbled or broke slowly. They had trouble with their footing on the dirt before they joined the turf course and got back into the race. Well, that cost a lot of horses their best chances. You can see it almost time and time again. To add this chute gives those horses a chance to grab dirt turf footing from the start, get across, hopefully without too much disruption, and then the race will be back on the main turf oval. So it'll be interesting to see how it looks, how it plays. I think it'll be well-supported because there's so many turf sprinters on this circuit, and we'll just have to wait and see on a day-to-day basis how it looks.
Well, one of the turf highlights, the American Oaks, which, speaking of Japanese fillies, started with Cesario coming over at one of the most amazing spectacles in memory, sharing, highlighting the lineup for the American Oaks. And it occurs to me that sharing could actually be part of a big day for Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, because I know Independence Hall coming back in the Malibu.
Independence Hall joined Michael McCarthy's stable in the late of the summer and won an allowance race going 6.5 furlongs in his first start since the Florida Derby. And he won that allowance race on November 8th at Del Mar going 6.5, and he had absolutely no reason to win the race. It was too short for him. But Mike Smith was aboard, and he coaxed him home in very impressive style. And if that's the way he's going to come back, I expect a big race from that horse in the Malibu Stakes. I didn't mention him a moment ago. I should have. And that's a very, very nice prospect in that regard. And he's been working steadily too for Michael McCarthy in the last few weeks. So, you know, it was interesting. Eclipse had 7 horses in the Breeders' Cup, and they had, you know, high hopes for that. And I think they're going to have a chance for a big day with, as you mentioned, with December 26th.
Steve Anderson, everybody, and the end of the Southern California season with a flourish, and then kicks off back at Santa Anita, getting the winter started. Steve, thanks for everything all year long, and best wishes for Merry Christmas, happy, healthy 2021. Hope, keep my fingers crossed about a Santa Anita Derby visit this year and being able to come out there. We were stymied last year for Thank God I came in February, actually. That was the last time, then pretty much that was the last trip of the year, period, for, you know, getting on an airplane. So,
and I'm looking forward to, you know, like you say, the whole year, but really, you know, let's get a good look in this culture, and maybe in the second half of the year, we can start to see folks come back, and hopefully in some capacity. I don't know what it'll be quite yet, because it's still pretty testy out there. But, you know, the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar in November, hopefully folks who live around the nation can come over and come watch a good horse race, because it's just not satisfying to watch it on TV as it is to be there in person.
Steve Anderson, everybody. DRF Anderson with an E. Steve, be well, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you very much.
Steve Anderson, folks. Let's take the time out, last of the morning, and come back. Andy Serling is going to join us, and we'll get Andy's final 2020 visit and recap the week and set up the end of the year action. Andy next. Todd Pletcher in a little bit as well. Got a ton of stuff to go over with Todd. He's got, I think about a, last time we spoke was October, so I've got a whole bunch of stake winners, Malathat, and then, of course, from this weekend, the big start at Gulfstream to the season down there, and that included Largent's upset in the Fort Lauderdale, plus three other winners. Back after this, Andy Serling.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit continues with the L.A. County Fair meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The meet is off to a great start with strong fields throughout, and the stakes action continues at the Orange County Track, headed by the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. The Futurity has seen some tremendous winners in years past, like Standouts McKenzie in 2017, Improbable in 2018, and Thousand Words in 2019. Watch and wager on all the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers headed open satellite locations. On weekdays, our first post will be 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great races.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents